but you do coaching for, you're really focused on coaching with men. And we're not talking about basketball or swimming. What kind of coaching do you kind of focus on with your male clients? Hey, welcome back to Concrete Conversations, a construction podcast helping the average Joe to become the above average pro. Let me ask you a question. Do you deal with stress? Are you a man? Today's guest focuses on men's mental health. You're going to love it. She and I talked about vulnerability, about relational blind spots, toxicity, masculinity, just a lot of stuff. This is an episode for men who aren't asking for help, but who need to grow. Elise Michaels has coached countless men in how to become the fathers, husbands, and men in society that we need. If you're a Joe, average or not, stop scrolling. This episode's for you. Do you have any issues in dealing with average Joes or coaching average Joes?
Oh, no. You know, and I don't think it's really good to label ourselves as average Joes. Everybody's got something unique about them, and men and women in general tend to struggle as a society with very similar problems in their own niches, right? So men, no matter if they're a quote-unquote average Joe or a businessman or whatever, they're struggling with a lot of the same issues.
Sure. Everybody at some point in their career, their life, is feeling like an average Joe. Like, man, what am I doing here that's all that special at all? And so I think everybody can probably relate to that to some degree. But you do coaching for, you're really focused on coaching with men. And we're not talking about basketball or swimming. What kind of coaching do you kind of focus on with your male clients?
I help them with their mental health issues. Anytime they feel stuck, like they have been working their whole lives and then they just get to this point where they've either lost purpose, passion, motivation, or they're struggling with their relationship issues, I help them find the subconscious block, so the things that they can't see, to get to the point in their lives where they really love it again.
So is now with the Concrete Conversations podcast, this is really geared towards the AEC industry, the architectural, engineering, and construction industry. And that constitutes, that is men. This is a very male-dominated industry. And so most of the viewers and listeners to our show are men. And I even had some pushback concerning having you on the show because you're not directly related to the construction industry at all. But with you being a professional who's trained in working with men's mental health, I actually thought that your perspective on that topic, on men and how they just live inside their brains day to day, would be very apropos. Now, does the profession of your client have any relation to the techniques you use in terms of dealing with them? Or are you truly profession agnostic?
It's profession agnostic. And it's really kind of depending on me, right? What have I studied and what types of problems have I become acquainted with over the years? What I know about the construction industry is it's one of those industries that's hyper-masculinized. And what I mean by that is it hasn't modernized in the way of accepting vulnerability within its culture. It's very much like, don't be a sissy still, you know, like, how strong are you? Kind of like the beating each other up is the way that you bond, and being strong is the way that you bond. But with that comes the hyper-masculinized way of dealing with mental health issues. So a lot of guys go home and they don't know how to process the problems, the stress, the things that they're going through. So I really wanted to come on your podcast to maybe see if some men can resonate with some of the things that we're talking about, right? Because it's fine if you don't want to be too vulnerable in front of people. We're not here to say, okay, now you should cry every day and like get into your child's pose yoga during lunch break. It's not like that, but it's saying, you know, there comes a point in time where stress can kill you, and we want to help you process things before you get to that point, because a lot of men are still struggling with handling too much on their plate and going home and not knowing who to talk to, feeling alone, feeling isolated, and feeling extra isolated when they go to work, especially in the construction industry.
You know, and I saw that you had posted about your direct quote here is, at some point we stop growing by ourselves because we can't see our own blind spots. So whose assistance is most important in men being able to see past those or through those blind spots?
Well, I think that men have to be open first to being able to see their blind spots, because everybody every day is a mere reflection of your own behavior. But if you're not open to saying, oh, this could be a reflection of me or how I represent myself to the world, you're going to be very resistant to change. So the most important person in a man's healing journey is himself. But the second person is someone who can be aware and cognizant enough to say, hey, I see what you can't see. This is what your behavior pattern is reflecting, and I'm going to show you. That's what at least I do in my coaching, is I say, okay, this is what I'm seeing happening in your life as a result of you behaving in XYZ way. And if you want to change it, this is what we have to do instead.
So this is, you're talking about someone outside of, is this someone outside of the coach that's a very important person, that it's very important to have someone beyond just the coach, like a spouse or a close friend who's a coworker or something like this?
I don't think you should rely on your spouses or friends to help you with this information. They can always be of assistance, but usually they don't have the tools. And that's the mistake a lot of us make when we're on like a healing journey or when we're first stepping out. We're like, oh, I have friends and family, or I have a spouse to help me with this. I don't need a therapist. I don't need a coach. But you forget that your friends and family, they're not trained to be able to come from a non-judgmental place. So they are always coming with their own biases. They're not trained to have healing tools. They don't know how to reflect back to you in an accurate way how to solve your problems. So a lot of people, especially men, when men for the first time feel like they want to be vulnerable, they usually go to a spouse or go to a friend, and then they get a negative feedback response because that spouse or that friend doesn't know how to handle the problem, or they're having their own stress. And when they feel that shut down for the first time, usually they're like, okay, that didn't work. I got rejected. I got turned down. It was negative, and I'm never doing it ever again. But the thing is, it's not that you being vulnerable was what was wrong. It was the fact that you went to the wrong person.
So does a spouse or a friend or a sibling or something, does that person play an important role in a growing process and being able to see beyond our blind spots?
I mean, absolutely, they play an important role. How up to bat are they for you changing? Because also when we're on a changing path, you have to think, if you're in a relationship, you've created a relationship container with each of those people, with your friends, with your coworkers, with your spouse. And the second you start changing, well, now you're changing the rules of that container. You're changing how they now see you and perceive you. So are they on board to change with you? And are they on board to support that change? And are they going to change themselves? Because chances are, they're also going to need to change a little bit to adapt to who you are now becoming.
So in the closest of relationships, you know, let's take a spousal relationship, for example, that change, is what I'm hearing from you, cannot be one-sided. It will be unbalanced. And that if there are bad habits or bad mental states that people have been in for years, then that affects both parties there. So is this a situation where if a man is going through and working on doing some coaching with you, are you also recommending that the wife is going through and doing something here also? I mean, how much do you get involved with things external to the relationship between you and your male client?
Yeah, I mean, you always have to do an assessment on what their environment is like. We are the sum of the five people we surround ourselves by. So if your environment is not supportive, it's kind of like putting a fresh flower seed in toxic soil. Like, how are we going to expect to grow, or how much are we going to expect to grow? Because you have 1 hour session with me or 1 hour session with a personal trainer, you go home and then everything is in the old behavior patterns or negative or not supportive. How do you expect to keep your own behavior going, right? The momentum's not there. So it's like you always have to check. But a lot of the time when one spouse goes for something like therapy or coaching, the other spouse is not. Sometimes you get lucky and they are, but most of the time I would say it's not. So then we have to build kind of like contingency plans. Okay, how are you going to keep the motivation up outside of sessions? What small wins are you going to set up? What new friend groups are you going to set up? What support groups are you going to join to keep yourself motivated and making sure that you're on the right track? And then eventually with the changes, sometimes spouses catch up and they're like, wow, they're making a lot of improvements. They're becoming more masculine. They're really like becoming a certain type of man that I want to follow. Or sometimes, you know, it leads to the separations and the differences are just too much.
You know, in the blind spots that you talk about, what are we really talking about here? I mean, getting down to brass tacks, are these relational blind spots? I mean, relationships at work, you know, a relationship with a supervisor, with coworkers, or is it a relationship at home? Is it non-relational in nature? What do you mostly see when it comes to things that we're just not aware of that are there blocking us, causing us to plateau?
Yeah, the blind spots are always within yourself, and the symptoms are troubles in relationship, troubles at work, not being able to get the money that you want, feeling like you can't be vulnerable. The blind spots end up being, I don't know how to set boundaries. I don't know what my own needs are. I don't know how to ask for my needs. I don't know how to ask for my wife to love me more in a certain way. I don't know how to be a leader. I don't know how to go after what I want. Those are the actual blind spots that you're not seeing, and you're just seeing the symptoms of not knowing how to do those things. So I teach you how to fix the actual root cause of all of the symptoms that you're having.
You've mentioned vulnerability a couple of times, and it's, the phrase talk is cheap comes to mind. It's real easy to talk about vulnerability. It's a totally different thing, as you mentioned earlier, in a hyper-masculine industry like construction, but really anywhere. It doesn't, profession regardless. It's hard to just admit a problem and to ask for help, be it from a spouse, from a friend, from a coach. I mean, this is a tough thing to get through. And you mentioned that is absolutely imperative in order for a journey of healing therapy to really take place. How does one take that first step? Is it pride that keeps us from wanting to admit this wrong and change? Is it something else?
Well, first, it's definitely pride and ego, and it's just societal expectations that prevent men because they don't want to appear weak. So I would suggest if someone is like even curious or they want to get started, is to reframe it from asking for help to asking for growth. Because men are very invested in their self-growth. You'll always ask to be an apprentice to someone. You know, you're always looking for mentors or coaches to help you grow in different areas, right? So this is no different. I'm not like helping men because they're weak or they're broken. I'm helping men get to the next level because they desire something more, because they want to grow, because they are strong and they want to be stronger. So when you're in a hyper-masculinized industry and you want to start approaching vulnerability, understand that vulnerability doesn't just mean I cry in your arms. Vulnerability doesn't just mean I'm sad all the time or I'm asking for help because like I'm a baby. It's saying, how can I learn to trust someone more? How can I learn to rely on someone more? So starting small, asking your friend, asking your brother, like, hey, you know, can you come over and help me build this part of the porch or something? Like, that's starting to build vulnerability because it is asking for help, and you don't see it that way because I'm sure you've already done projects with friends before. So it's just starting from one category and transitioning to another. Hey, man, I'm going through a difficult time. Would you be able to listen to me and give your perspective, right? Like, think about it as growing, not needing help because I'm weak.
Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, as I'm a man also, and so this all resonates with me quite well.
Is it resonating?
It does, because I mean, as a man, I like to think of myself as an open-minded guy, but on the other hand, if you ask most people would probably claim that they're above average in one thing or another. But by definition, most people are average. And so while I like to think that I'm an open-minded guy, I think I probably in reality am not. If you ask my wife, she'd probably tell you something different from what I would tell you. And the idea of asking for help is not one that I'm opposed to, but I'm much more open to the idea of asking for trying to find growth. Because yeah, I find guys who know more about me all the time. It's actually very easy to find people who know more about me, or know more than me. I mean, in woodworking, I love being able to talk to people who know a lot about woodworking and just kind of copy their skills, asking them to mentor me a little bit. With ground penetrating radar, do the exact same thing. If I've done anything right in my career, it's to find people who know more than me and try to just be a sponge, be around them and be a sponge. And I suppose this is what you're talking about here, is to accept that this is just another category of your life, of your professional, of your personal life, that where growth could be had, and we're on our own, left to our own devices, we will grow to a point and plateau, and that it really takes intervention through another party to grow beyond that plateau. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Because here's the thing: a lot of men are emotionally stunted. They're emotionally stinted because when men are growing up, they get treated differently than women. It's like when a little girl falls and scrapes her knee, she gets nurtured, she gets babied. But when a boy falls and scrapes his knee, it's kind of like, rub some dirt on it, you're fine, what are you crying for? Like, this is statistically shown that boys are treated differently than girls. But it's not to say that boys should be babied or girls should be babied. It's to say that men don't get the reflective nurturing of emotions that women do. So that's why women are, quote unquote, so much more mature, so much more earlier than men are, because they were reflected emotional maturity and how do I feel in this moment and how do I process this. Men are taught not to process emotions, not to acknowledge emotions. So, but emotions are not choosing genetics. They're not male or female. So men still have all the emotional capacity, but they don't know how to process things. So then they grow up and they're trying to experience sadness or love or happiness, but all they've been taught is how to shove it down. So now you're in this place where it's like you're trying to have healthy, loving relationships or partnerships, or you're trying to grow in a certain area and things are coming up and you don't want to face them. So it really stunts you in so many different areas when you can't be the full capacity of the human you're meant to be.
Mm, that's really great. You know, everybody should be following you on LinkedIn. You just are coming up with great content. A lot of it is, it's all focused around coaching and, you know, therapy for men and things, but a lot of it is very funny. There was a post that I saw that you put up a couple of days ago that I couldn't help but just add my two cents of stupid comment, because it was a funny post. And so I love all your content. A lot of it's very funny, but all of it's very relevant. It's great stuff. So everybody follow Elise on LinkedIn. And what other channels should folks be following you on? Is LinkedIn kind of your main channel where you are, or elsewhere too?
I'm mostly on Instagram and TikTok. So at Elise Michaels, M-I-C-H-E-A-L-S. You can find me pretty much on any social media and I'll be there.
Fantastic. Okay, follow Elise. So Elise, you have talked about inner masculinity and connecting with inner masculinity. Now, a lot has been said about masculinity in general over the last, you know, few years. How can men, especially in traditionally, you know, like the traditionally gruff men that you can very easily find in construction, how can these men connect with an inner masculinity without stepping over a line, or let's say into toxic masculinity, which is quite a buzzword today? How do we talk about masculinity without making it toxic?
Yeah, I mean, well, masculinity is not toxic. When I've referenced toxic masculinity, it's just the societal expectations that are put on men not to feel emotions, not to, you know, basically to be a robot. I think we first need to understand like what masculinity is, and it's not associated with the skill sets that you have, like how much wood you can chop, how can you change a car, or, you know, like a car tire or the oil or whatever. That's not what defines you as a man. You choose who you are as a man dependent on your core values, right? How well do I lead? How well am I secure? How much am I secure in myself? You know, what type of man do I display to the world that is part of my inherent values, as opposed to who do I act because that's what the world expects of me, right? A lot of men are desperate to get validation, so they will chase materialistic things, money, but feel very empty inside. And then there are other men who are so secure in their masculinity that they can wear nail polish and not care. Like, The Rock could wear a tutu with his daughter and not care, and you would never think The Rock is not a masculine man, right? So there, you have to be set in your core values and what defines you as a man, and that's how you're going to connect to your inner masculinity.
So is the is toxic masculinity, is that a thing in your mind, or is that some sort of like socially fabricated construct that doesn't really exist if you really look down into the details? Tell us about.
I mean, everything is a socially fabricated construct. nothing is like real. Like, we all made this up. Like, everybody's just making stuff up so that they can have a punchline for their podcast, right? That's why we're bringing it up right now. I would never say being a masculine man is toxic. I think toxic things are toxic. Are you abusive? Are you threatening? Are you manipulative? Those are things that are toxic, and then people will attach that to masculinity, or they'll attach that to femininity. But masculine and feminine energy in itself is not toxic.
I'm really glad to hear your for what it's worth, I agree with that 100%. There's nothing about my wife as a feminine person that's toxic, and there's nothing about me as a traditionally masculine person that is toxic. I love my wife, I love my children. I hope that I'm a good employer. I like building stuff. I'm 90, maybe 80% done with a shed in the backyard that I swear I'm going to finish. And I'm building some beds for the kids. I love working on cars and woodworking and building stuff. I have a lot of these traditionally masculine traits. I grow a beard, and all these things that are like manny things. And the conversation around toxic masculinity over the last few years is something that I just continually am trying to reassess myself. Like, is there something about me that is poison? I mean, toxicity, that this is poison, right? Is there something about the way that I'm interacting with my kids or with others in the workplace or with my wife that is poisonous? And if so, then absolutely, root that out. And a number of times, many times, I come back with the answer of, oh yeah, kind of. And then I have a conversation with my wife, and we talk about, have I been treating you well enough in this way? Am I supporting you in your role with what you're doing around the home with the kids? Sometimes we've had this conversation and concluded that, yeah, I need to step up my game here a little bit. I've gotten lazy with supporting her. I've gotten casual in my relationship with her. I'm not taking her out on dates often enough. And so I think that toxicity or poison in a relationship or any aspect of a person's life can certainly creep in. And that's why you have communication. That's why you are being introspective, trying to figure out, where some problems are creeping in there. I'm a gardener. When I have weeds starting to creep into a part of my garden, I don't pretend like the weeds aren't there. I go over and I rip them out.
Right. Exactly. And the weeds are always going to come. That's just the nature of being a gardener.
They come every season.
And it can make you mad, but you're going to take care of it. And that's And the toxicity that's coming up doesn't have anything to do with you being a man. It has to do with how we were raised, our culture, the way that modern times are changing. Modern problems call for modern solutions. We can't just look back and say, this is how people used to do it. It doesn't really apply anymore. It's like, so how you approach today's problems as the man that you are determines the man that you are. Right? Like, if you hear your wife saying these problems, you have these conversations over and over again, and you don't do anything to change. If you're like, well, she says I don't take her out on dates, and you just go to your friends and complain about how she says you don't take her out on dates, but you don't do anything about it, and then you're complaining about how there's no sex life and blah, blah, blah. It's like, that's you. ignoring your role as a man. You're not taking the lead. You're not fixing it. You know, like, why are you emasculating yourself like that? But if you hear the problems and you're like, okay, I'm going to take the lead and I'm going to do something about this, she's going to feel less stressed. Like, nobody keeps bringing up problems if the problems are solved. And yeah, so like, there's nothing, but that doesn't have anything to do with you and your masculinity. It has everything to do with just behavior patterns that come up, just normal weeds that come up through a garden, through a relationship.
You know, several years ago, I was getting more interested in woodworking, and I absolutely love the creative process and just basically everything about woodworking. You get to work with these loud, big tools. I mean, what's not to love about woodworking? So the sawdust, it smells so good, except for some. There's some sawdust, like Russian olive. Russian olive really stinks. Oak smells pretty good. Walnut is amazing. I love walnut. I've got a friend who hates the smell of walnut. I think he's nuts. But anyway, but what's not to love about woodworking? Plus, there are guys out there who spend entire days out on a golf course, away from their family, doing, you know, this golfing thing. And those guys I don't know what they're thinking. They're out away from their family. They're developing this hobby that takes them away from home, takes them away from spending time with their kids and their spouse. I mean, what a dumb hobby. Hey, honey, I'm going to go in the garage and be there for the next 6 hours, and I'm not going to see anybody. And I thought that this was somehow superior. And it took me several months, and I eventually figured out I might as well be golfing. And when I said that out loud this one day, I said, I might as well be golfing if I'm going to be in my shop woodworking away from my family. I realized that I was as bad as a golfer. And it was very painful. And now, for the record, I'm not a golfer, but I don't judge anybody who is golfing. You know,
yeah, we
all
can
have
tell you're not a golfer.
Yeah, no, we have things we have to get over, to try to get past, and golfing is one of them for some people. So, you know, that's
so
okay.
Funny.
That's
I'm
okay.
I'm not hating on golf. I'm a golf girl, so.
I mean, I've played golf. Okay, I've never played golf, but I've hit a golf ball with a golf club before, like five or six times. Anyway, I'm not a golfer. But it was really, truly, I was spending all my free time, I was spending doing a hobby that I had in my head as good for the family. I thought it was some really cool plant that I was nurturing in the garden. And turns out that it was this big thistle. It had this big pretty flower on it. And it was a thistle the whole time. There's no redeeming value to it. No quality to this that has any value at all. And I was away from my kids. I was making a mess in the garage. Big mess. I was away from my wife. My wife was taking more and more of these. Well, she was taking all these responsibilities and just shouldering them herself. She just doesn't know how to complain. It's amazing. But I kind of wish my wife would complain more. We might need to edit that part out. Anyway, but it was extremely selfish of me. And once I realized it, and that still pops up every once in a while, it was immensely selfish of me. And I had to, through working with her and a lot of communication, I had to figure out how to root that thing out. And it was painful. If everybody's ever pulled out a thistle, they're stubborn and it hurts your hands. And it was tough, but that selfishness is real easy to creep into your life, especially when you think that you delude yourself into thinking that this selfish hobby is actually somehow benefiting somebody else. In reality, in this case, it wasn't doing anything for anybody, just me. It was very, very self-centered, and it was rough. I don't know why we got onto that, but anyway, just bore my soul here on the podcast, but it was good to get through that, I guess, at that time in my life. But that was when I had some, yeah, it was good, but it's just painful to think back and think of how much I was adding to my wife's stress. I mean, that time in our marriage, I was working very long hours, and for me, it was a bit of a it was very much a stress relief, but the therapy that came from that relief of my stress was adding or, you know, that relief of my stress was adding stress to my wife, and in so doing, I was also neglecting my children. And I don't believe that any true therapy, any real healthy therapy can ever actually be had. Therapy is a Greek word that means healing. I mean, real healing, how can that come at the cost, at the expense of somebody else's happiness, at somebody else's well-being, especially someone as important to me as my wife and children? And that was a huge realization for me, something that still pops up every once in a while, and it's definitely painful to think about how self-centered I was at that stage of my life. Yeah.
I love that. I love that. Such a powerful realization. And I, you know, for my clients, I see them not doing anything for themselves. So I always recommend them to find an activity like that to do. But I love that you are kind of making the distinction. There's a difference between maybe doing something for an hour and doing something for 6 hours, like all day in the garage on top of working long hours, like the complete neglect of the family life, of the spousal life, and not making any time for romance, for connection, for being a mentor. You definitely don't want to be a present dad who is an absent dad, right? And that's unfortunately what a lot of men become, because they're taught, and I'm, you know, because construction is a hyper-masculinized industry, it has a lot of the traditional values, like blue-collar workers. They go to work, they bring home the check. It's kind of like wife stays at home. And they're doing all these long hours to support the family, and that's what's seen as the best role to do, but they don't open up space to be vulnerable to their family either. So they're not letting their kids in their heart space. They're not kind of spending time nurturing them, parenting them, being present with them. And that's where a huge gap is left for a lot of children when they grow up. They say, Dad was there, he paid our bills, I know he loved us. But then I say, how do you know he loved you? Well, you know, he supported us. I know. Yeah, I know he loved us, but did he tell you he loved you? Not really. He wasn't really that type of guy. Did he hug you? Not really. He wasn't that type of guy. You know, he kind of showed up for stuff. He told me once that he was proud of me, and you cling on. You cling on to those moments as a child. You cling on to those moments of when's dad going to pay attention to me or play ball with me or, you know, show up to my stuff and like open his heart with me. Because kids want their parents to be close to them. They want to feel the presence of their parents. So that's kind of like a trap that a lot of men get stuck in, is they think they're doing everything because they're doing everything to support and provide. And it's not saying it's not enough. It's just saying, you know that you're not connecting yourself with your own vulnerability, and your kids can feel that, and they don't care what you do for work. They don't care how much money you bring home. They just care that you bring yourself home and you are paying attention to them and you're with them and they can feel your presence in the room. That's what kids value the most, really.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And let's full on pivot this direction. This is the direction that I wanted to get to here in the episode. And make sure everybody, you know, this is the kind of conversations I'm having right now with the conversation I'm having with Elise is on par with the kinds of content that Elise is creating, and I'm sure the kind of coaching situation that you would have with Elise. So I hope everybody connects and starts following Elise Michaels here. I have a lot of titles, a lot of hats that I wear as a small business owner. I'm very active in my church. I'm active in my neighborhood here. The most important titles that I have are father and husband. And those are the titles that are going to last, you know, beyond me selling or losing or my company, or, you know, they're just going to perpetuate, forever. And so consequently, due to their longevity, one must conclude that those are the most important titles that I have. And I wholeheartedly subscribe to that concept. And so I find it asinine to prioritize career over family in anything but a short-term situation. I mean, when I first, I've had my company Enhanced Scanning for a bit over 5 years, and there have been some very busy times in those 5 years. My my busiest time, I had a 2-3-4 month period, maybe a 2 or 3 month period where I was working somewhere around 120 to 130 hours a week. And it was very, there wasn't much beyond work that I was doing there. Work and sleeping. And sleeping was kind of, it was definitely secondary. And that was a tough 2 or 3 months. Really, it was a tough first year and a half, 2 years. But especially that time, it was very, very busy. And I had to do a lot more communicating with my wife and also communicating with my kids too, just to make sure that with my wife, make sure that, hey, this is kind of what's happening. We've jumped into this whole like business ownership thing. We knew that that was going to entail a lot of work, a lot of long hours. This is part of that. This is a period where this is happening right now. We're in the thick of this. And as I've never met someone that I admire more than my wife. She is just a saint of a woman. And she just took everything but the work. She was handling 100%. And that was a time where it was very imbalanced on a work heavy side for me and my time. And it's gone back and forth. This whole balance, this idea of a balanced work life is a constantly moving target. Every day, every week is going to be a little bit different. I don't personally believe that there's any way to consistently have a perfect work life balance. It's always going to be changing. But overall, my main focus is on those roles that will never go away: father and husband, owner of a business, GPR dude, anything like that. Those things are going to go away. How do we, owing to the fact that, acknowledging the fact that these are roles that never go away, our most important relationships are never going to leave. How do we prioritize that in terms of our masculinity, in terms of how to be the men that our wives and our husbands, or excuse me, our wives and our children need us to be, and how do we show that to our children? How do we show that example to them? Because I want my sons to have this healthy masculinity, and I want my daughters to respect that and look for men who are hopefully better than me, but at least as good as me.
Yeah. So start with being impressed by the type of respectable man that you can become for yourself first, and stop looking outward to see how impressive you can be for others or how masculine you can be for others. If you're constantly thinking about how can I be better for them, instead of how can I continue to impress myself every day with how well I lead, how well I take care of people, how well I treat people, you're going to be guided by a broken compass, because other people's opinions and direction and, you know, whatever is always going to be changing. And then you're always going to be anxious about how to adapt yourself to their emotions, to their needs, to their wants. But if you're just leading yourself and you're saying, I'm following a set of these core values, this is how I'm going to lead as a man, I'm dedicated and focused to being better, to always growing, to always being more supportive and more loving and more firm in my own boundaries, then your compass is steady. And then no matter what anybody else's emotions are changing or what may have, they're going to look at you as that rock, as that pillar that is unwavering, is strong. And that's what masculinity is. It's something to lean on. It's something to follow. A leader doesn't change his mind depending on what the team thinks, unless he takes it into account, but he doesn't just change directions like a flag in the wind. He says, this is where we're going, you know, follow me or don't. And like in a respectful way, not just like do what I say, right? So continue to try to impress yourself every day with how well you are handling things, what you're doing, and how you're treating people. And as a byproduct, people will respect you and lean on you and see you as that guy.
You know, it's we talk about the masculine nature of the construction industry and just the fact that, you know, if you're swinging a hammer or pouring concrete or wiring a building, I mean, these are just seen as manly things, and the traditional masculinity also has a real dearth of sensitivity or of emotional vulnerability. If you bring up children into a conversation, if you're ever talking with some guy about, hey, what are you doing this weekend? And he said, oh, my daughter's got a birthday party. I'm going to have 12 8-year-olds over at my house on Saturday. Then that breaks down just about any brick wall. If you can talk to a man, give me the gruffest, most masculine guy you've ever seen, and have a conversation with him about his little girl or about his boy who's, you know, playing t-ball, then you will see a man just melt into this, into a puddle of love, who's just thinking about his kids and thinking about wanting what's best for them and trying to measure up to be the man that your kids need. And that's, that's something that occupies my thoughts all the time, being the man my kids need. And so I think in society we do see these hyper masculine men and industries as just toxic. It comes up so often, and there's nothing more pure than a man trying to be the husband and the father that he needs, that his family needs him to be. And that is there behind just about every man that you'll meet on one of these construction sites, is just a man who's got a lot of love for his family. That's why he's out there swinging that hammer and wiring that building, is for them.
I was going to say, it's just about any man in any blue collar job, they tend to be the most loving and caring for their families. Like, they are doing the work, the literal manual labor to support their families because they love them. And so that's why it's so important to like listen to that part where we talk about your presence is so needed, like your emotional presence is so needed, because they see this big strong man and they're so proud of the big strong man, but like there's nothing more touching than a big strong man who becomes a teddy bear when his daughter hugs him or when his son wants to spend time with him. Like, that's what they want. They want to know that the hero that they see is also still their daddy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so this is this something that you've worked with men in doing, is being able to kind of take that gruff side that they have and kind of inevitably develop to a degree at work, you know, for 8 hours a day, and being able to, is that something that you teach men to turn off, or is that something you teach men to expose their family to a degree? I mean, how much do you have to leave at work, the things that happen at work, and how much of that do you bring home so that your family can know the full you and share a little bit in the burden of what's weighing down daddy? And I mean, how do you find that balance?
Yeah, so it's not so much about focusing on leaving something behind or turning something off. It's about, how do I incorporate more of this other part of myself? How do I open up more? How do I be softer? How do I embrace more of my vulnerability? Because you don't want to abandon what's made you you. You don't want to abandon what you've become attached to or what's built you up. You just want to add in something else that also helps you live a better life.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I could see if you're able to communicate with your 8-year-old daughter about her dolls, or about, you know, both my girls just got brand new haircuts yesterday, and they were just ecstatic beyond belief for, you know, doing something different with their hair. They're 11 and 9, and they just think it's the coolest thing ever. And it's a very different type of communication that I'm using with them about being excited that they're excited about something. And that's when I'm honest with myself, I realize that learning to communicate with them helps me to communicate with other people with whom I just don't maybe see a whole lot of connection, or see a whole lot in common. I don't have many people in my work life who are super excited about their haircut. That's just not really a thing usually, or about getting a new doll. That's usually not a thing. But I do talk with people with whom I have to communicate, and they just have very different interests than me. And learning to communicate with them, I suppose, has been informed by my learning to communicate with these two little girls who just see the world through very different lenses than I do.
Yeah, and when you're talking about your little girls, I would like to touch on a different topic, if that's okay. Because right now we're talking about how to connect and be vulnerable with our kids, and we're emphasizing the connection with kids a lot and how to be a mentor for them. But the best way that you can be a mentor for your children is being a good spouse. It's like really ignored in a lot of dynamics. Like if you, and there's this internet trend that's kind of like, your mom, your wife, or your child, like what is the order? And I'm not going to say, like, from my perspective, from quite a few people's perspectives, the order should be spouse, child, mother, because your spouse is the one you chose, and it's ultimately the relationship that your kids are going to try to emulate when they grow up. So if you're skipping over your spouse to take care of your children aren't going to feel like, oh, you know, they're not necessarily going to get into a good relationship because they see you abandoning your mom, their mom, for them. They see the abandonment there. So they choose just subconsciously someone who abandons them, someone who puts them second. Their needs don't get met, right? Like how you teach your kids how to be loved the best is how do you love the spouse the best? And even if you're divorced or separated or something, you can still treat your ex-partner with respect, even if they're toxic, right? Going back to how do you show up as a man? What kind of core values are you going to display? It's not about them, it's about you. So how do you treat the woman in your life that you love? Because that's how boy or girl they grow up, that's going to see what type of man do I want, or what type of man do I want to become, and how do I want to treat my spouse?
Very similar thought to that, the one that I've... that I love, was, said by Elaine Dalton. She said, how do you raise a little girl? Love her mother. And, that's, which was for me, I mean, our first was a boy. We have four kids, boy, girl, boy. And our first son, I mean, this was okay, cool. This is a very miniature version of me. I know how I was raised, so I can do this. I can do boy. I grew up with no sisters, and having my first girl was quite daunting. Learning to just the idea of how to raise a little girl was a little tough to wrap my mind around until I heard this quote, and that's really changed the way that I've approached any of my kids, raising any of them, is just to loving their mother, or as you said, if that marriage isn't there, if there's separation or divorce or something like that, having respect for that other party is huge. In fact, I hope this isn't too personal. My wife was, her parents divorced when she was about four, and, but to my wife's recollection, she never heard them bad mouthing each other. And, to this day, they don't, if they speak about each other, you know, they may not be super interested in hanging out or something like that. But I've never heard either of them, just speaking ill or bad mouthing, the other. And I think that is pure poison for a child's life. To have one parent, married or not, one parent bad mouthing and speaking evil of the other parent, and that is I just think that's pure poison, and doesn't do yourself any good, and certainly is anything but advantageous for that child. Yeah. I've always really respected my in-laws for that choice to just, whatever their personal feelings were, they didn't express those in front of the kids, and which is great. Anyway, Elise, our time is basically running out here, so we need to wrap this up. I really want to thank you for coming on and having the conversation with me, and having the conversation hopefully with our viewers, our listeners here. This topic that I would summarize in how to be a man and how to be the man that your family needs, how to be the man that your company needs, is just, there are few more important than that. And I think that your work in helping to coach men to be the men that society and families and companies need is just so important and just wonderful. And as a man, I thank you for your support of us and for your desire and ability to appreciate what's going on upstairs, right? We have a lot of weight on our shoulders when it comes to being the man that our husbands and being the husband that our wife needs to be, being the father that our children needs to be, and then being the breadwinner that we try to be at work and everything. This is just so important. Elise, are you laughing at me?
No, I would never.
So I really appreciate the conversations we've been having, and I appreciate your humor. Okay, so everybody, make sure that you're following Elise Michaels. She has a lot of great content out there, a lot of humorous content, a lot of serious content, a lot of just content. So follow Elise on LinkedIn, Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, all the other social things that are out there. She probably puts up like garage sale signs on light posts around her neighborhood. She's doing that. Go buy stuff at her garage sale. Whatever Elise is doing, make sure to follow that. Make sure to follow and like the Concrete Conversations podcast so that we can keep getting on great guests like Miss Elise. If you don't do that stuff, then, I mean, you'll hurt my feelings. And I'll probably need to start doing a whole lot of coaching with Elise.
He's trying to be more vulnerable now, so.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He'll hurt his feelings, and then he'll tell you about it, and then he'll cry.
I'll probably cry. Yeah, that's, nobody wants to hear or see that. So just do everybody a favor. Hey, do yourself a favor. Subscribe to the podcast.
I mean, come on.
Come on, what are you doing? There was a documentary, a whole book called Girl, Wash Your Face, and it's kind of similar here. Like, dude, just subscribe to the podcast. I mean, come on. What are you doing? Anyway, do it. Please. Thanks, guys.